Yeah, here we go. Come on now. Come on. Hey. Yeah. Talking about following that money trail. Yeah. Welcome to Let's Do It Radio. With Miss Inez says, let's talk about it. And we're going to follow the money trail. Yes, we are. We're going to follow that money trail. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to do this right here, as Jerry Maguire would say.
Maybe. Show me the money! Show me the
money! Show us where the trail is. So, forget about showing me the money. What we need to do is follow the money trail, that is, okay? So, today is Tuesday, June 7th, 2022, and I am Miss Inez, your hostess for the evening, CEO and fashion designer of Anais Aku Designs, broadcasting to you worldwide. Yes, worldwide. So call into the show today at 845-241-9985. And let's talk about these topics. We're going to talk about NRA, mass shootings, bans on guns, gun control, COVID, where the money is, prisons, privatization, opioid addiction, mental health, and human trafficking. Okay, so we're going to hear a short clip from, yes, a short clip from, you wouldn't believe who, the number two NRA's former person, Joshua Powell, on money making was the top priority in the NRA. Let's listen.
Will you open your book on a terrible day in American history on December 14th, 2012? That was the day of the Sandy Hook massacre. You were actually at a meeting in New York with some investors interested in getting into the gun manufacturing business, investing in them. You were not then working for the NRA, but you had worked with people at the NRA. And I know you called one of them to talk about that terrible shooting. Tell us about that.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, I have, two daughters at the time that were in elementary school. And, you know, that is a day I think that changed the history and the course of America, and certainly was a very essential part of this entire debate. But I do remember having a phone call of talking about, hey, how's this going to work? You know, I was one of the younger insiders discussing strategy about what was going on and before I had been on the board and worked there. And it was, hey, this is, you know, watch and learn. We're going to light this up. We're going to turn it on fire, and we're going to make money, in essence. And that is the issue, right, is that the NRA for years has very simply turned up the heat, poured on the gasoline, and raised money off this situation. And it's gone on and on and on. And why? Because it's easy to raise money on fear. Yeah, this was going to be the mother of all gunfights. This was the big one. This is the worst. And, you know, watch and learn. And, you know, we're going to rain members and money down on the association, in essence.
Why does this help fundraise? You said it was, I think you said something, it's going to rain money. Why does this, a tragedy like this, actually help fundraising for the NRA?
It's a larger symptom we have today in politics and society, right, is that when these happen, these events happen, and folks run off to one side and say, well, we need to ban, we're going to ban, you know, AR-15s, we're going to, you know, ban magazines, we're going to, you know, put new XYZ checks in place. Well, all you need to do is tell folks, the hardcore side, the right of the right, which is the NRA, which is who the NRA represents, that they're coming for your guns. Ultimately, Wayne delivered, you know, the famous speech downtown, which was, you know, the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, and that was his answer in essence. And why did he say that? He said that because it's inflammatory. The problem is look, there's 100 million gun owners in this country. There's only 5 million NRA members. 35% of all the gun owners in this country are Democrats. So what am I saying? That you have this organization that represents the fringe of the fringe that's wagging the tail of the dog, and that needs to stop.
And there wasn't a lot of discussion about the kids or the teachers who were killed as well, right? That wasn't what the NRA was initially concerned about.
No. That's not the issue. The issue is taking these events and, you know, creating this frankly toxic stew, and raising money off of it. There are solutions to this problem, and there is a problem. You know, there is a gun violence problem in this country, and I frankly think that the NRA should have been a leader in these discussions. The answer of no is not a solution.
The NRA has a lot of problems right now. One of them last month, the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, filed a civil lawsuit against the NRA. She was able to do that because 148 years ago, the NRA was chartered as a nonprofit organization in New York, so it stuck with New York officials overseeing them. She argues in her lawsuit that years of corruption and misspending meant the organization, the NRA, should be disbanded. Is she right about that? Is it years of corruption and misspending within the NRA?
Well, I think she's really, frankly, I think she's only at the tip of the iceberg. I think when she sees below the waterline, what she'll find is decades of fraud, corruption, no-bid contracts, to the tune of not tens of millions, but hundreds of millions of dollars.
Now, you could have problems with this lawsuit yourself. She named three NRA leaders, including yourself, seeking millions of dollars in restitution. The lawsuit says that a contractor was paying your wife $30,000 a month and that you tried to hide it. You've reimbursed the NRA for some personal expenses that have been charged there. Do you feel that you yourself are in some peril here legally?
Well, obviously, I can't talk a lot about the legal issues that are going on with the AG, but I will tell you that I'm very confident and comfortable with the truth and the facts as they play out as it relates to myself.
Are you cooperating with her investigation?
I would say that we are absolutely in conversations with the Attorney General at this point.
Conversations with the Attorney General about cooperating with her investigation.
Again, I've got to leave that to the lawyers, but we're certainly, obviously, I've written this book to, the timing is somewhat ominous, but, you know, I wanted to write a book to tell the truth about the National Rifle Association, regardless of what the Attorney General of New York said or did.
Do you think your book is helpful for her investigation?
Well, like I said, I think that she's at the tip of the iceberg, and I think if she reads through the book, she'll get a better understanding of the depth of the problems within the association, and she's got a lot of work to do.
So, hundreds of millions of dollars. We're following the money trail today, and you just heard from Joshua Powell, who's NRA's former number two, saying that making money was the top priority. And that was USA Today. And it's like, wow. We have a couple of callers on the line with us. We have Sergeant Parks on the line, who is cooking. And we have Aaron on the line as well. And we have another caller on the line with the last four, 0598. So what do y'all think about that clip, making all that money? So they didn't even talk about the children. They could have cared less about how many children died. Aaron?
Yes. Hi. How are you doing today?
Good.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Yes, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
In this?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So what I wanted to add was, as far as that really surprised me, but then again, it didn't surprise me as far as NRA and money, because this America, you want to try to capitalize on everything. Fear is definitely a remnant of to get the money rolling. I totally understand that. But the whole point, I think, as far as African-American, I'm not against what the NRA represents, because I understand it. You know, the NRA basically started with Paul Revere saying, the British are coming. You know, that's when they sort of armed themselves against the standing government at that time, which was the British. And I believe that's why people are having weapons today. NRA is trying to hold their rights down, not to be in battlement with people, but just in case the government sways in a direction that they are not comfortable with, as far as we see it's January 6th. So, I do believe that we're all getting, a lot of people are getting misled as far as why there are weapons in America. You know what I mean? And one of the main reasons weapons, and most citizens have weapons, it's not really based on self-protection from the average citizen. It's from the government if it decides to sway into another direction. And I think that's, like I said, it all started back when Paul Revere said the British are coming, arm yourselves. You know what I mean? And that was the standing government at that time.
Because they said it was about 143 years ago, and it was a non-profit organization, not a for-profit organization, but it sounds like they're making money. You know, senators, you know, and everybody else. So it's like, where do we stop? Do we need to just, this is what I want to say, denounce the NRA? What do you think?
Well, personally,
can you
hear me?
Yes, I can.
Personally, you know, they kind of want to put that game out of our reach, where that we can do nothing. You know, yeah, sure, they are padding all of the politicians and stuff that want to stay there with the RRA just so they can get all of those donations and stuff. No.
Right.
And they don't want average everyday black folks to have no gun, because they don't know how that would go. They would say, "Oh, this is gonna happen in the inner city." This one politician made the remark last week and stuff that, "Oh, that's the black people and stuff had the gun." Okay, that's what trying to say, that we're killing each other with the guns, you know.
Right.
And,
right.
The simple fact is, why on earth would you need a high capacity weapon to go hunting?
It depends on what you're hunting.
Yeah, it's absurd. You know, something that'll hold that much ammo, and an idiot can just pull the trigger and just turn it, point it, you know. That's the whole question. Why do we allow that? And then we allow 18-year-old kids that can't even go in a store and buy no liquor. We let 18 can't vote, but they can go get a high-capacity weapon. Okay?
Right, right.
Go get it legally. All right?
And I think they should raise it to 25, not to 21, actually. That's me.
I think that we shouldn't have high capacity weapons. The military are the only one that need high capacity weapons. You know, I'm saying, like, hey, everybody can keep their guns, you know. Don't need those
weapons.
But
they don't need no ARs.
That's what I'm saying. We don't need them.
No, we don't need no ARs and AKs and LMNOPs and Smith and Wessons, but even I have a Smith and Wesson, I think, on some. But
you gotta keep Mr. Smith.
Oh yeah, I'm keeping Mr. Smith. But it's like, you know, I mean, my ex-husband, he's the one who got the gun, you know, and he was a cop in the service, and so, you know, I don't know what he was protecting. It's like, really? really? And it's just funny because this big old long cannon, I was sitting there better than he was. And he got mad and says, oh, you don't need no more training. It's like, okay. I mean, it's simple. But who needs, like you say, high-capacity weaponry? They should be banned on the streets. They should be banned everywhere. And kids should not be able to get them, period, with the T at the end.
Unless they're arming themselves for a race war.
They're already doing that, though.
Well, you see that why that's why they need them high capacity weapons.
No, they can they don't need that high of a capacity weapon. A Smith and Wesson, a Llama, a Ruger, a 38 can do just as much damage as a high capacity. And they don't need even that.
You got to tell them that they want all the firepower they can. Having the IRA and the all of these racist groups and stuff, militias that's running, you know, like just before the election, you had this paramilitary group that go up in the Michigan
okay.
Capitol, and it was all strapped. I said, wow, they look like stormtroopers. That remind me of Hitler with the Gestapo.
Wow.
It did. I mean, they went up in there with their weapons and stuff. They surrounded the whole Capitol. You know, I guess that was a prelude to January 6th. Okay? Remember they went up in there, and then they threatened to kidnap the governor? Come on, now. They threatened to kidnap a governor. So I think some of these people are going crazy. I really do.
It's mental health. It really is. It's a mental health thing as well. Those are the red flag people. Right. That's the red flag people.
Then to top that, they got these other idiots talking about all the people that they want to let in the board, let across the border, people of color going to come into the country and replace white people. I said, that's so weak.
Well,
as many guns as these people got, you know, and airplanes, they got everything. They probably got bombs in their airplanes and stuff.
It's like leading sheep to the slaughter.
Basically,
that's all it is. I mean, you let them in, and you just, you know, you don't feed them properly, you don't clothe them properly, you have them in as detainees, and then, you know, then you wonder why they want to kill somebody because of how you treated them, or how you treated me, or how you treated my family. Well, you know,
but
so
you
they
have to pay
retaliate.
Attention. You have to pay attention because they're doing this all over the world. All the Anglo nations and stuff are doing this. They want to limit the amount of the number of people of color that's coming to their country. Everybody doing that. Great Britain's doing it. France is doing it. Norway. All of these places are doing that. It's a movement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm.
It's a movement.
I guess the question would be: is why are people of color other than us wanting to leave the country of their origin? You know, what is the reason to leave your own country to come here?
For a better life. Let's get some of that money.
And the wild part is they know what the problems that they want to partake. But here's the part that gets me. I've worked here as far as in Atlanta, dealing in major constructions, and I had to hire 200-300 people under me. And I found that the majority of people in the company that I was under wanted me not to hire African Americans more than people of Mexican descent. And so when they did come, and I walked to a project that was 95% non-American and non-African American, I was sitting down talking at lunch with one of the guys that was working for me, and he basically stated that their disliking for people of color, which kind of caught me off guard, because I thought we was all coming from the same thing as far as dealing with the Anglo-Saxon. You know what I mean? I thought, hey, we're on the same side, but that turns out not to be the case. And I'm not trying to really sway too much of what's going on, but the gun violence that they deal with over in Mexico, they get here and you don't hardly hear none of it. It's as though whatever temperament that they had for leaving where they were at to get here, and they're just calm. And that kind of really caught me off guard as far as what we're concerned and how we are able to, and I'm not trying to sway the conversation, but how we're not having these jobs anymore in construction and certain things. A lot of these young kids, there was no other movement but toward gangs, some type of affiliation of trying to feel like there's something. And these weaponries that they're getting, listen, these ARs and stuff like that, these black boys ain't walking in gun stores at 18 years old buying them. There was some entity putting these guns, as they did to crack and Compton, and they're putting these guns in our neighborhoods on purpose. You know, this is not an accident. These guns are hitting us, and or these kids will get these ARs, and I mean, I've seen some of the weaponry that's out there, and it's scary. It is scary. These weapons are getting into our neighborhoods. And as far as them complaining about, oh, they had 30 mass shootings this weekend, well, we've had 30 mass shootings every other day for, what, 20 years now? And now they want to call this big uprising. It's like the drug problem. As soon as it affects them, that's when the help comes in. And I understand that. I'm not asking for, I don't know how to call it, but I'm not asking for them to help us. We're going to have to arrange something within ourselves defensively to find out what's really going on. How are these weapons getting in our neighborhoods? Nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking how these boys ain't walking in and buying a gun at 18 and buying an AR-18. And but yet, a lot of these gang members, they have the top line weapons. And it's just that I think that needs to be investigated before they're talking about that on the House for the reasons that they're having to stop certain things, but they're not talking about why, how these weapons are getting into our neighborhood. So, yeah, that's my biggest thing. Why aren't we talking about how these weapons are getting in the black neighborhood?
I agree. Problem is that a lot of us feel like we're helpless and we can't do nothing, you know, because it's just like, well, they got our numbers and we're not going to say nothing. That's what they're really hoping, that we don't come together and that we don't come up with a situation and stuff where that we can handle it. That's why I hate talking to a lot of sisters and brothers there. Oh, I ain't voting. I ain't registered to vote. My vote don't count nowhere. They're going to do anything they want to do. Well, I guess with that attitude, I guess they will be doing everything they want to do. They're already doing that. But if we don't say nothing, if we just let it go, nothing for nothing leaves nothing.
Right.
But we're right there. You know, this is not for us. This is for our kids. Imagine what world
we haven't saved them.
Yeah, what are we doing for them? Nothing. You know?
Not a thing. What did we say last time? What are we doing? What are we doing? How are we changing? We're not. We're not. We need to do that movement of change, of a rebuild, you know, because things are getting so out of hand that our kids are, they don't care. Like the young man, he shot his grandmother. Who does that? Who does that? Shooting your grandmother? Really? And it's like,
That's dealing with the mental illness. I mean, because I've read the whole bio about this young man, and he had read. But he didn't go to school 85% of the time this year. So no truancy officer stepped to his house or anything. Yeah, he missed school 85%. And when he was there, he would stalk people. Literally, he was stalking people and text them saying, I see what you have on. All because the person didn't want to be his friend.
Yeah.
So he gave up red flags long before he did what he did.
You know,
bullying.
Somebody knew what that kid was up to. Okay, somebody knew exactly what he was up to and stuff. And they saying, "Oh, he ain't gonna do nothing. He ain't gonna do this. And he ain't gonna do that."
Look what happened.
Social media knew what he was up to. He told them, "I just shot my grandmother, and now I'm on my way to elementary school." He announced this. They're gonna play that down now. He announced what he was gonna do. Just like I know the gentleman he killed the people in Buffalo, I know he told somebody he's about to go kill some black people. Because he needed that bragging right. He wanted to be a martyr.
He went online. That's how he got his wrote his thesis and stuff for it. He took a page out of the kid that the dude that killed those people in Norway, killed those 50 some people in Norway, he took a page out of that. He wrote his manifesto off that, and what he said was he's tired, okay, of people coming to the United States trying to replace white people. Now, he's 18 years old. Now, this is the guy in Buffalo. This is the one in Buffalo that killed the black people and stuff, okay? He's tired of them coming to America and replacing white folks, okay? And that's what they're all passing that around. We won't be replaced. You can't replace us.
You know, that's the hard part that I don't understand about what they're saying about replacement. For the simple fact is, there's not even an heir of smidgen that we can replace anybody. We're actually being replaced as far as blue-collar workers in this country. So, I mean, it all started with the Trump conversations.
Absolutely. I agree with you. But you see, it was some years. They had this plan for years. Everybody thinking that it came up overnight. No, it didn't. Follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
Follow the money. What about the Russian investigation? Why was it just all of a sudden dumped? They already had the deal. This dude was trying to get Putin to he was going to build a high-capacity hotel, one of the best that you ever seen in the world in Russia, and then give Putin the whole floor. Everybody knew that. Jeffrey Armstrong, what that guy named that his running partner was, that had them little young girls they were pimping all over the world.
Epstein.
You know?
Epstein.
Epstein, yeah. Everybody knew that. Everybody knew that.
Yes, follow the money. That's exactly what it is. That man had over $2 billion. Epstein. And his case. That's why he ended up dying in the cell.
That's what we know.
Yeah.
He had more than that, and girl and stuff, she's a key to all of that. And I'm gonna tell you what.
This lane.
I would say within the next year, so she's gonna end up dead. You know why?
Yeah, she's
done. Too many powerful people involved in that.
Yeah. Well, you got the British family involved in it too. Also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of their nephews, Third Charles something. I mean,
that was the queen's son. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And
that was the queen's son. He's been doing this for years. Okay. That same little girl that he paid, the one that he paid off, he's been making love with her everywhere. Just sending her to Russia, Paris, you name it, okay? Then he's going to tell her, okay, that's it. Mm-hmm. You can't do nothing to me because guess what? I got the power. I can do anything
so
I want to do.
Still there?
So.
Brother Park?
Yeah, I'm here.
And as we're talking about other countries and mass shootings, I have a clip on how other nations have dealt with gun safety after mass shootings. So let's listen to that.
Earlier this week, Canada unveiled new legislation that would freeze new handgun purchases and create a mandatory buyback program for semi-automatic rifles. The announcement coincided with the funerals in Uvalde, but it was years in the making and an example of how countries around the world have responded to their own mass shootings.
Okay, let me see here.
Earlier Earlier this week, Canada unveiled new legislation that would freeze new handgun purchases and create a mandatory buyback program for semi-automatic rifles. The announcement coincided with the funerals in Uvalde, but it was years in the making and an example of how countries around the world have responded to their own mass shootings.
What happened in...
Can y'all hear me at all?
Yes, I can hear it.
The question is, okay, why the United States is so liberal with the guns? Why are they so liberal with the guns? Because, you know, we do have a rich history of selling guns to everybody. Like, we went during the Second World War, we had DuPont building guns for Germany. Okay, and then after the war, DuPont claimed that the United States government, now check this out, they're making weapons and stuff available for the Germans, and then after the war, the Germans lost the war, DuPont come back and then claimed that the United States government owed them retribution for their factories and for what they lost during the war. Can you believe that? That's mind-boggling, you know?
Well, actually, it's not too mind-boggling when we look at the history of this great nation that our people backbone built. You know, and we were never scaled to have weapons. We were never, I mean, even in during the service time, they took the certain things they used in the cotton fields off of the slaves after every day. They would take it away from them to make sure they had no weapons. So the fact that they're doing it now, making sure that what I think was 75% of us have some injustice done to saying that we have a felony, which you can't, now you can't buy guns. So the main thing is keep the guns out of our hands and put it in their hands. And like I said, so what happens is people start getting guns illegally. Those people who have guns in the inner city or wherever at the store, these little gangbanging things, they are buying these guns through drugs, selling drugs. So they literally are getting us for two birds and one stone. They're putting the drugs in our communities. Now these guys are fighting for turf, and now instead of having 79 specials and maybe a 38 to shoot at each other, they're having these AR-15s, and now each gang is able to buy better, I don't want to say better, but bigger, more lethal weapons. And let's be honest,
powerful.
They have no training, so they never hit what they're aiming at. And normally I think it's what, 42% are innocent. They get hit with the weapons. They have nothing to do with gang affiliation. So when AR lets out, as Sergeant Parks knows, when you let that AR off, those bullets come out so fast, they go in all different directions.
Correct.
And that's
and
why
whatever,
a lot of innocent people be killed.
But what about the ghost guns?
Wait. Whatever happened to fist fights? Why do we have to settle everything with guns? Whatever happened to fist fights? Stuff like that.
Because it's about the money.
You know,
it's about the
ain't
money.
No blood in fist fights. Yeah, that don't make the point. You get up and go, you know, it's the one that can stand over here and put you in your grave. But unfortunately, we're just putting each other in our own grave. You know,
right?
That's our demise.
Mm-hmm.
They know where it's at. They ain't going
as
up in
said,
the project.
The money
let them kill each other. That's the way to do. Mm-hmm. We don't have to send no squads over in there. A bullet might hit one of our officers and stuff. Let them do it themselves.
They can get rid of themselves. That's what that basically is. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to worry about it.
Most of us are playing right in their hands. Okay, mm-hmm. 44 million African Americans, we can't figure out what the key is. We can't figure out how we can get that money going in our hands. If we get a big enough savings and loan association and stuff where that we can actually go to Congress and tell them people just how we feel about it, we'll have some sisters and brothers sell us out before we even get we finish with the meeting.
Right.
Okay, before we finish with the meeting, Romina already snitched on us, and this is how they coming. They got 15 million of them and stuff, and then the IRS and the CIA and FBI are trying to figure out how you get that money for them taxes. Right there alone, that's going to cut you down. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're going to
the IRS will be coming after you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, law forbid, if one of us got a record, if we got a record, okay, law forbid what's going to happen. Then they're going to come up and say, oh, you go to work. And it's not that I'm trying, I got an established business and stuff. Oh, you got a record, uh-huh. So you must be it. They pass that on to the media. He's been involved in A, B, C, and D and stuff, and then he's trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's what we do to each other.
Mm-mm.
That's true. This next clip I'm going to play is talking about mass shootings and how other nations have dealt with gun safety after mass shootings. Let's hear what they got to say.
Earlier this week, Canada unveiled new legislation that would freeze new handgun purchases and create a mandatory buyback program for semi-automatic rifles. The announcement coincided with the funerals in Uvalde, but it was years in the making and an example of how countries around the world have responded to their own mass shootings.
What happened in Nova Scotia this past weekend is every community's worst nightmare.
It was the deadliest shooting in Canadian history. In April 2020, 22 people were shot to death in Nova Scotia, including Police Constable Heidi Stevenson, who died trying to protect her community. Canada had suffered previous gun tragedies and had previously tightened its gun laws, but the Nova Scotia massacre led to an immediate ban on military-style rifles and further restrictions announced by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau this week.
What this means is that it will no longer be possible to buy, sell, transfer, or import handguns anywhere in Canada.
The new legislation also forces owners of military-style rifles to turn them in for destruction. That move echoes reforms made in 2019 by New Zealand. For the city of Christchurch, March 16th was a day of mourning. Residents laid mountains of flowers near two Muslim worship centers where a lone gunman the day before had walked inside and killed 51 people as they prayed. For Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, it was a call to action.
I can tell you one thing right now. Our gun laws will change.
In fewer than 4 weeks, Parliament debated and passed a bill banning most semi-automatic rifles and high-capacity magazines. A mandatory buyback program offered money for banned guns. Anyone who kept them went to jail. Just yesterday, Ardern spoke to President Biden about gun safety.
I also reflected on our experience with gun reform, but it is just that. It is our experience. I'm sure that the likes of Australia, who we use their experience, would equally be open to doing the same.
But first, a scene of horror and carnage in the Tasmanian town of Port Arthur tonight.
In 1996, Australian TV showed the aftermath of a horrific massacre in a town known for tourism. A gunman armed with two rifles killed 36 people. It became known as one of Australia's darkest days.
It was really shocking. 35 people were killed, which at the time was the largest of these types of shootings ever in the world. And because it was a holiday destination, people were killed and injured from every state in Australia.
It's time for tough, tough gun laws.
Rebecca Peters is an expert on international gun control who led the campaign to reform Australia's gun laws.
We used to have in Australia a mass shooting about once a year. Our two major parties were both intimidated by the gun lobby, which had said, whichever party moves to strengthen the gun laws, we will campaign against them in an election.
But Conservative Prime Minister John Howard had just been elected and didn't feel those fears. Within days, he announced sweeping reforms and rallied the nation for tighter gun control. Australia's Parliament passed the National Firearms Agreement. It banned semi-automatic rifles and shotguns, established a registry of all guns in the country, and created more strict background checks. And a one-year national mandatory buyback program seized and destroyed 650,000 guns.
Our politicians somehow just stood up and said, we're going to be grown-ups, and both parties agreed. It was really critical to have bipartisan support. And so I think it was kind of a rare moment of integrity for our members of Parliament.
What was the impact of the gun laws passed after Port Arthur?
Well, it's been a very dramatic impact. We didn't have another mass shooting for 25 years. We still have things go wrong, but we have much lower levels of gun violence and also a higher level of confidence. You know, in Australians, it never occurs to us that we might get murdered. And we don't have metal detectors going into schools.
School shootings in Britain are also largely unthinkable since the 1996 tragedy in the Scottish town of Dunblane. Parents rushed to Dunblane Primary after a gunman carrying four handguns shot dead a teacher and 16 children.
Just in a state of shock, it seems unreal. I can't even understand anyone doing anything like this.
Over the next few years, the British passed increasingly strict laws that eventually banned all but the smallest caliber handguns. Today, Britain's gun homicide rate is 0.7 per million, one of the lowest in the world. The U.S. rate is 38 times the U.K.'s. So far this year, the U.S. has suffered at least 225 mass shootings.
But these kinds of mass shootings never happen with the kind of frequency they happen in America. Why? Why are we willing to live with this carnage? Why do we keep letting this happen?
But why does this only happen in your country?
Last week, Sky News' Mark Stone challenged Texas Republican Ted Cruz.
Why only in America? Why is this American exceptionalism so awful?
You know, I'm sorry you think American exceptionalism is awful.
I think this aspect of it.
You get your political agenda.
No, it's
God love you.
And so it appears these tragedies will remain uniquely American.
And then the real short one on how countries across the globe have responded to the mass shooting.
In the wake of the Texas school shooting, it's unclear if lawmakers will do anything to tighten gun laws. That has not been the case in other countries which have experienced mass shooting. Holly Williams is in London. Holly, good morning. How are people there reacting to what happened here?
Well, good morning, Michelle. Many people here in the UK feel a special bond with the US, and it's painful to see American children killed like this. But a lot of people I've spoken to here also say they're mystified, they're confused, because here and in other countries where there's been a massacre, the government brings in tougher gun control laws, and they cannot comprehend why that doesn't happen in the US.
See how that is? See how that is? Why can't we have something so simple? Follow the money trail, correct?
Well, one thing I don't think the Texas thing is going to take America too surprising was the fact there were people of brown color. They were people of and very poor community also. You know, so they're hollering because it just shocked the world, you know, almost like the George Floyd thing. Oh, my God. And then give it another 2 weeks. And it's going to play itself down. This isn't Sandy Hook. You know, this isn't their children. These people who got killed don't resemble the reflection in their mirror. Doesn't resemble when they look down and see little Beth Ann. So trust me, they are not going to take this seriously. And with Joe Biden, with his little fake self, we can't have enough of this. You've been on the Senate for 47 years. You've been there for 47 years. And it's gotten worse. So you salvage it, but you could do an executive order if he wanted to. And that's just a slam dunk right there. But he's not going to do it. It's all about the money. Keep his son out of jail.
And you know, what's his name? Matthew McConaughey, he's from Uvalde. And he had talked about, you know, the mass shootings and stuff. And it's like, wow. You know, it's sad. It's all mental health. It's all just sad that we don't see these red flags of our children or other people. And even in the one in Philadelphia, it's like, what made him do that? You know, how many did we have over the weekend? 5 mass shootings over the weekend?
Yep.
I mean, come on now. That's an epidemic, if you ask me. These mass shootings, you think COVID was an epidemic. These mass shootings are an epidemic. Would you not say so?
Oh, absolutely. Well, but listen to me. What you got to do now is you got to anticipate what's going to happen now. Now, they know that 70% of Americans that want something done about guns, you know, and they say, oh, the ID check and the mental situation and blah, blah, blah. I can guarantee you that they're going to come in the middle and they're going to agree to some insignificant deal until this whole thing blows over. I guarantee you that's what's going to happen. And Mr. Biden is riding right in on it because he already got one. Well, we got to do something, you know. Because ain't no telling where his bread is, who's buttering his bread, you know.
Mm.
With his son doing the thing that happened in the Ukraine, making millions and millions of dollars in the United States, giving the Ukraine billions of dollars a year. You think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, his son's a drug addict in Ukraine, getting $6 million and stuff a month. Oh my God! Okay, absolute drug addict, a failure. His son is a failure.
You're talking about Bo or the other one?
He's talking about Hunter. But the point is, Biden's been in Washington for over 50-something years now. Okay, he's been sitting in the Senate for 47 years. He helped write the law, the three strikes were out. He wrote that. When Clinton militarized the police, called the police funding, they knew they was going after black communities with AR-15s and big tanks and stuff, and going to these little neighborhoods and barely had screen doors to hold up when the wind blow. See, people who we think got our back because they got a D in front of their political things as Democrats, we are so fooled by that. And that's why we don't send it. And I had one of the Republican senators to put the militarized the police, and one of the Republicans said, let's get three strikes, you're out. We're so busy looking on that side. We're not seeing the side. We're straight ticket voting. We need to look and see what they are doing because, like I said, they talk a good game to our black communities. They walk in our churches and they say all this stuff during elections, and then they just walk away. Because one thing we have to realize is our voting rights, we're not going to be the second class anymore because now the Latinos are outnumbering us now. When you get outnumbered, especially in legislation and stuff, your vote, what you need for your community is lessened. So since we're being outnumbered,
right,
and outmaneuvered politically because we're not paying attention. I mean, we have to understand the days of that picture in your grandma's house of Jesus, John F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, those days, that's where the trouble started. We got behooved, we got tricked and bamboozled, and after all the technology we got to push the button to get the truth, we still turn a blind eye to it.
Okay, but we can't get it twisted, guys. Let's don't get it twisted. The bottom line and stuff is what took place and stuff is that we don't know if the 37% of Hispanics and stuff in this country are legal. Do you know? Is that for a fact?
Mm-hmm.
Remember back 20 years ago they changed the designation on the census and stuff to say, are you Hispanic related? What kind of hell, what kind of junk is that if you're Hispanic related?
Right.
Anybody could come up and say, I'm Hispanic related. So, okay, well, we got all these people, Hispanic people and stuff, then they must be legal. I don't think that's the case. I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought them in the country to talk about cheap labor. Them people got more education than all us put together.
Yeah, smart. They work together.
All I can say is, down here in Atlanta, 85-90% of your construction workers are non-African American. They don't even speak any English. Now, how are they getting inside things like the Mercedes-Benz building? Things are not able to work, and they're not. And I know they're not documented. So how are they getting in there like that? We're talking about $4.5 billion building going up, and only 6% was African American working in there.
Yeah.
I mean, if you walk around Atlanta or a major city, especially Atlanta, Look at the construction going down. Anywhere you look, you do not see African-American men out there doing none of the work. Now, up north, it's different because they have the union. They can't slide in the union. And I'm not blaming them as a people. We know it's somebody of power who wants to pay cheaper labor to get people to work. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they get with a Latino person who's legal, who has an established business, and they contract to him. And then he goes and gets who he wants to get because there's nobody at the construction site looking for paperwork.
That's worldwide, man. That's worldwide. That's what they're doing, worldwide. You know why they do that? It's because a lot of black folks just not going to listen to no junk. They get these people to come in and stuff because they already made an agreement and stuff with them. Yeah, well, this is what this is. And they don't come in trying to be flashy on the job or none of that. What they do is come in and cut the job up and get their people in there and put their people to work. Okay? So they just always, they bypass us. We don't even have no programs like we used to have
anymore.
And what you're doing. We don't have no programs to even trying to introduce blacks into that. You know, especially young blacks, where the money jobs are, they say, oh, that looks too strenuous to me to be able to do, so we get uncut to do something else. You know, they got us by the, almost by the short hairs, but I'm sure that we, if we come up with something on how we can get that dollar bill going amongst ourselves, okay, that's the only thing that we're going to be able to do. You got to own your own stuff, man. You don't own your own stuff. And then I was talking to this kid the other day, and he said, I said, well, what do you think was talking about Bill Gates? And tell him, wow, man, I bet he'd be walking around with cases full of money, man. He'd just be just going and spending the money. I said, what? I said, you actually think that? That man riding the world on credit, okay, and it's backed by all of his properties, everything that he owns is backed by his credit. He never got to see no money, period.
Right.
We're not educated. Our education on money is just non-void. We are not educated on money. Our children aren't educated on money. We weren't educated on money. We don't really understand the power of the dollar. We don't understand some of the money, majority of the money. I mean, because here we are paying taxes, but our sons are being shot by the police. Here we are paying the police his payroll, taking his family, and he pulled us over and harassed us. You know, we're actually paying to be brutalized.
Amen.
We're financing it.
Right.
Amen.
And what you tell them is, I'm paying your salary. So
try that. Wait. Mm-hmm. As a black male, we wouldn't dare utter those words to a police officer with a gun.
But
because that right there is going to make the situation go in a whole new direction. I mean, as a black male, we have to be very careful because I remember one time I got pulled over and one of my friends was in the military. One of my friends started yapping back at the police because he asked for his ID. And my friend was right, but I told him, I want to get home to my family. See, that's where we're at right now. I want to get home to my family. Well, you right, but don't be right in my car.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get home to my family.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I felt hurt that I couldn't speak up the way I wanted to, but I have a family to worry about. And that's what black males do. That's those of us who understand what can happen to us out here. Now, I may not take Joe Boss talking stuff to me because I own my own business, but I do have to worry about whether I'm going to live or die if I get pulled over by a police officer.
That's right.
Right, exactly.
That's real talk. That's real. You got to train your sons. Be careful. Put your hands on the steering wheel. Don't move. I'm training my sons when they get their license or how to be. I have a four-year-old that when I'm driving, he says, Daddy, don't go through red light. You might get pulled over by the police and get killed. Like,
Hey, I don't hear that. Had that same conversation with my kids. Look, you got to know how to conduct yourself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know how to conduct yourself. You can't flip because the moment you flip, you dead.
Beat up, charged up, felony, and they use those little petty arrests to take away our future by saying, well, can't hire you because you have a felony.
That's right.
Well, I got mistreated, and that's why I'm in Atlanta. I got pulled over. I didn't get pulled over. I had a special car service for people that was going out and to certain parties, and I drove them. One guy had brass knuckles. I said, hey, you can't take that where you're going. I settled on Carson, which is brass knuckles. You buy a novelty shop. I put on the thing. I went and got me a coffee. I come back. Cops rolled on me like I just robbed somebody. I have vitiligo, so I know it wasn't describing like somebody else. And I asked the police, get out. What's the problem? Just be quiet. And then, I'm going to listen. But I'm good. I don't have a problem. Well, he turned around. He goes, what's this? I said, what's brass knuckles? Well, that's why I'm sitting on the car, so in plain sight. And he goes, God, that's a weapon. Take him downtown. And they literally booked me at 1 o'clock in the morning. My family didn't know who I was. I told the police officer to in the back of my car, said, go tell your cronies you did your job. And he goes, what do you mean? You got another black man to leave Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm out of here. I said, I'm ex-military. I served the country. I have a family. I have a legit business, as you see. And I said, I wasn't even driving. How did you pull me over? I wasn't even driving. He said, I did a walk-by, and I saw what appeared to be a pistol. What? And then when you follow the brass knuckles, you still taking me to jail? So, you know what I mean? And I end up having a $400 fine for that. So, you know, it's as black males, we have to be very careful. Our lives are in jeopardy. These weapons, we got to watch out for people who look like us shooting at us, and then we got to watch out for people we're paying to stop the people from shooting like us. So, who am I financing?
Right. Right. And that's what's hard, because being black in America, maybe we'll do even talk about that next time or something like that, but it's like we have to go by a whole different set of rules, a whole different set of agenda, a whole different set of everything. So we have to be so careful, so careful.
But we've been trained on that by our forefathers. We've been trained how to act. And for them, it's the people that look like us that are giving us the most death, the most problems, the most bad situations I've ever had come from somebody that looked like me. That's the hardest. How do you address that? I mean, I've never seen nothing addressed but as a quote-unquote black-on-black crime, because then everybody went and get into the psychological thing of it. To me, if you could kill another black person, how did you get arrested? Because clearly you have a gun. You just killed somebody. Mm-hmm. But yet, someone's going to kill someone, like, turn themselves in. What? That's what it's against. You just killed two people. But now there's a white man coming after you. You humble like Bambi. The white boys never turn themselves in. It's always a shootout.
Well, our next topic is COVID, and that was about $480 billion money, income. And so there's a clip on the COVID-19 money trail, so I'm going to play that for you.
Money for more testing in hospitals was included in the $480 billion relief package passed by the Senate late today.
And that same bill includes $310 billion more for the government's Payment Protection Program, the PPP. Working for Chicago is our commitment to help business owners and their employees navigate through this process. Chris Tai, you've been looking into where that money, where that's already been loaned, and is this all working?
Brad and Erica, think of it this way. 2 decades worth of small business loans being doled out in 2 weeks. A University of Chicago accounting professor I spoke with today, who knows a thing or two about big numbers and doling out grades, says, yes, there have been some kinks, but as far as this is concerned, the federal government is passing this test.
I don't think it's fair that the big guys get everything and the little guys get nothing.
Paul Gattuso waited more than a month to find out if he'd get his loan. 38 years a pizza maker here in West Suburban Westchester. He says word of $20 million loans to chains like Ruth's Chris in just a matter of days because of their strong credit. Insulting to true small businesses.
You check your emails hourly. You're waiting anxiously to hear something.
That something came through into his bank account yesterday, his portion of the $342 billion going out nationally. Illinois getting $16 billion of that, spread out over 70,000 or so loans, including Paul in Westchester.
It's following the payroll dollars. Those companies that have payroll, it looks like it's getting allocated across industries, across states, across company sizes, according to payroll.
Nationally, no industry getting more of that low-interest federal loan money than construction, followed by science and tech, manufacturing, healthcare, and hotel and food prep. Hotel and food companies, though, granted a loophole that no matter your size, you're eligible, largely to help franchisees and an industry that's been shuttered. And while the Ruth's Chris stories are real, they're the exception, not the rule.
While a lot of talk has been about these public companies getting these funds, what I have seen is about $300 million of it has gone to the public companies. On a scale of $342 billion, that doesn't even, it's not even a rounding error, essentially.
There is one other thing to factor in with all of this. When you talk about these kind of loans, there's one problem, Brad, that the professor says we need to be mindful. This is unprecedented. We have never seen this kind of demand in this kind of timetable. He says we're going to have to keep our eyes. And, you know, one other thing, we pressed the federal government today, the Small Business Administration, who's running the whole show on this. We said, which companies are getting the most money in the city of Chicago, in the state of Illinois? Give us the rank. They said, at this point, we cannot provide that information. Once they have it, they said they'll pass it along, and of course, we'll pass it along to you.
Okay, Chris, you said the professor gave this a passing grade, but that's different than an A+, different than even a B. What are the significant kinks, and are those remediable for round two?
Well, let's call it grading on a curve, perhaps, and this is a very unprecedented curve. Curve's a word we're getting to know a lot about in the American lexicon. He says, listen, it's unprecedented, certainly. Typically in the American business scheme of things, we put two companies head-to-head, and the better company wins. Rarely are we propping companies up to this degree. But with this kind of predicament we're finding ourselves in, he says, we need to give these folks the latitude, the money, the payroll, so that these companies can come out the other side.
Okay. Chris Ty, our thanks, and we'll keep on pushing for those business names. Who got the money? Where did it all go? Thank you, Chris.
$480 billion. Did y'all get any of that except for the little stimulus? Nope.
You know,
what are they coming up with all this money? Go ahead.
The bottom line is you don't know what deals they're making. That's the key to it. Most of this stuff that's happening has been, most of the things that's taking place that's detrimental to everyday people and stuff, that's been in the plan for years, okay? But when the money and stuff, they know where the money channel's going to go, and then they do their pork belly thing. Okay, well, you know, I need 200 mil up here, and then so you need 150 mil over there. Okay, so let's go ahead and do it. And then they split the pie up. This is what you're going to get if you support it. This is what you're going to get if you support it. That's where it's been happening forever. And then we'd be the last people to know. Oh, wow, a stimulus check? We'll get a stimulus check? Oh, my God. But that's after they done took all the hundreds and millions and trillions, you know, and did something else with them.
Right.
Absolutely crazy, man.
And we didn't get, you know. Right. Follow the money trail. And that's what we're doing tonight. 845-241-9985 if you want to join us. And we have our gentleman out of Montana. Montana Joe has joined us. How are you doing, Joe? Joe? I know you're out there. You're probably just on mute. But it's like, I mean, funerals, parlors, they succeeded, you know, but it's just like, I mean, just It's sad. It was sad. And it's just like, are they trying to give us this illness? Are they trying to get rid of us? And I think that's what they were doing, is trying to get rid of, you know, some of the population, because what, half of the population passed away just about? How many? I think it was about half the population passed away.
Yeah, but I don't think their objective is to get rid of us, you see, because they still need those, that street money going on. We still have to go to Kmart, A-Mart, B-Mart, okay, to shop, and Walmart and all of these other places which they own. And we still haven't figured it out. If we could just say, okay, I'm going to try somewhere else is not affiliated with that. Let's follow the money and see where it's going. If it's not coming back to our community, then we should go somewhere else and do business with somebody else. You know, but
right.
We won't
create
do that.
Our own community.
That's right. They create our own community. And we can do
that. We talk about that all the time. Yeah, we talk about that all the time. We talked about what, buying a city, buying some land, and creating a our own town, Brownsville, USA, type of thing? Or,
yeah.
Or, you know, it's... Well, who's going to do that, Sergeant Park?
But you know, and until we can actually get there, you got to come with some foundation for us to rally behind each other to have some successes, okay, that we can look at that's going to be tangible. We're just not friend, how you call it, friendly... consumers, you know, we're used to the same old thing, going to the same old way, doing the same old thing, spending the same money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
day in and day out.
If we could sort of like stop and see the big picture. Okay, the big picture is how many of us do faces do you see in them corporations? Not a whole lot. And then we're traveling and we're spending money, but that money is just going to them. It's not coming back to us.
No, it's not. And we as a nation, we're a $1 trillion nation. But we don't seem to spend that money in our community at all.
Yeah, that's because we don't know how to harness that. We don't know how to harness that. My thing is that just here in Yakima, we'll create something that we can do, you know, to put into whatever you're doing. Now, think about it, okay? I told this guy this morning, I said, what if every black person, if we had a suitable lending and loan association that was going to do right by everybody, and then we could put... $15 for all 44 million African Americans put in $15 into the pot. Okay, how could we start with something like that? How could we? What could we do with something like that?
I mean, $15 times 11,000 billion. Shoot, we could, you know, we could be dangerous. But it's like, okay, well, I don't have that money. I can't. Yes, you can. You can do whatever you want to do. You do it every day. You get your hair done, your nails did. You go to Starbucks, whatever, and whatever, Seattle's Best, wherever you go to get your drinks and what have you. $15, that's not much. If we started our own...
But the principle has to be, okay, if I get $15 or maybe you know, you go $15 a month, say at the end of 10 years, okay, what would your investment look like? It all depends on what we take that money and invest in it to do. You know.
Right.
Now if we're getting our own stores and having our own markets and stuff, then it will come back to us, and we will be able to see that 5 years, maybe we'll be able to see that. Okay. So that's the only way that it would actually work. You know, so you got to keep it in there. 10 how to keep it in there 10 years. If you pull out, then you know, just like the going price, if you pull your money out before a certain time, you're not going to get, you're going to, you know.
The benefit.
I mean, we got to keep some money to keep everything going, you know.
Right.
Rest in our soul.
And our next topic, we're talking about prisons and privatization, privatizing them. So we're going to hear this clip on private prisons making money through mass incarceration, criminal justice series, through the For Social Change. A short clip.
Academy for Social Change presents
money.
Private Prisons. Did you know that the United States has the largest prison population in the world? In 2020, there were 1.8 million people in the prison system. So how does the government incarcerate that many people? And what happens when government-operated jails run out of space? As a result of federal prisons overcrowding, private corporations started developing their own facilities to house more people. Those who supported privatizing the prison system argued that it saved the government money. However, as these private companies created more detention centers, public officials and activists questioned whether these new facilities were actually harmful to the criminal justice system. Private prisons are owned and run by companies that have contracts with the federal and state governments that allow them to take in and hold incarcerated people. In the 1970s, President Nixon declared the war on drugs, which meant that he wanted tough-on-crime policies which would enforce strict punishments for any drug-related offense. In the 1980s, President Reagan announced that he would continue this agenda with even more force. As a result, more and more people were arrested and sentenced to time in prison, and public facilities started running out of space. The first private prisons, many of which were juvenile detention centers, were established during the Reagan administration, but corporations continued to rapidly build new facilities throughout the next 2.5 decades. One of the most famous cases of corruption in private prisons, known as the Kids for Cash scandal, involved two judges in Pennsylvania who gave juvenile offenders unusually long sentences. Authorities found out that these judges had accepted over $2 million worth of bribes from private prisons over the course of 4 years in exchange for sending children and teenagers to these facilities for longer periods of time. The two biggest private prison corporations that arose are CoreCivic and the GEO Group, which control over half the private prison industry. Together, they make over $3.5 billion per year and have continued to expand since 2005 by buying out smaller companies in the industry. In 2016, after the Department of Justice announced that private prisons would be phased out, both companies lost 50% of their stocks. However, the year after the inauguration of President Trump, both companies saw a more than 50% increase in stock prices. The Trump administration spent more than double the amount of money, about $595 million, towards contracting the GEO Group than the Obama administration. As of 2018, approximately 9% of federal and state prisoners were held in private institutions. While this may seem like a small population, it is important to note that the number of people housed in private prisons grew at a disproportionately fast rate. This is because nearly one in every four prisons built in the 1980s were constructed by a private company. One reason for this rapid expansion was the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Services, INS, worked with private companies to detain undocumented immigrants. As of 2019, more than 80% of immigration detainees are held in private facilities. Many of these centers are located near the U.S.-Mexico border. News reports and interviews with formerly incarcerated people reveal that the conditions inside these prisons, and in particular immigration detention centers, are inhumane. The food is sometimes inedible, the buildings are unsanitary, and there is often very limited, if any, access to health and education services. Private prisons hire fewer staff, pay them less, and provide significantly less training than public ones. This has led to higher rates of violence between imprisoned people and staff members, and overall more security issues. Critics also emphasize that because these companies operate for profit, that is all they truly care about. CoreCivic and the GEO Group have campaigned to convince politicians to incarcerate more people because the more beds they fill, the more money they make. For example, they lobbied to prevent immigration reform laws that would ease pathways to citizenship so that they could continue to house undocumented people. Criminal justice organizations have stated that the focus on profit allows the government to not take responsibility for making reforms. it also continues the practice of mass incarceration or imprisoning large populations, particularly marginalized communities. Since 2016, these critics of the private prison industry have pushed some elected officials and large companies to support divestment from private prisons. Activists stress that private prisons are just one part of the issue of mass incarceration in the country and that leaders must do more to reform the criminal justice system. Now it's your time to think further. Do you think it's possible to change the way private prisons operate? What reforms would you make to the private prison industry?
Undocumented. Brown people. Who else did they say? And how many billions of dollars? $595 billion? Whew. That's why they always put people like us in jail. Because they get more money. More money. Are you out there, Joe? Can you hear me, Mr. Park?
Yeah. I'm here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what do you think of that clip?
Well, you know,
it seems like a big old circle, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's nothing that we didn't know. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's nothing that we didn't know. They've been doing this for years, you know.
Uh-huh.
They're
mm-hmm.
using black labor and stuff to enrich them, you know. Making bags and license plates and
mm-hmm.
And different things. So we know that the question is, okay,
mm-hmm.
if and then you have to look at the cocaine versus crack cocaine deal to see how we
mm-hmm.
actually got into that situation. Okay,
gotcha.
Get caught with a
mm-hmm.
with a minimum amount of marijuana, and then it just so happened you had
mm-hmm.
some crack cocaine on you and stuff, and then all of the sentences and stuff, boom. Okay, that's
mm-hmm.
why they
mm-hmm.
every state is going back now and looking to see, because they know that if they can cut down on those incarcerations of those people and stuff that's selling what they already legalized, every state
uh-huh.
in the union legalized marijuana. So then we
right,
got a million
right.
people in jail and stuff behind what? You know?
Marijuana.
Traffic
uh-huh.
behind marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And it really looks
bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, white dude
mm-hmm.
was doing cocaine and he got stopped and stuff and he had $500 worth of cocaine. The brother and stuff just had one hit of crack. He got 10 years more than the white dude did. Well, the white dude can get a lawyer. he can get a lawyer
yeah.
to plead that to something else. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The brother's just going to have to stand the case. Got to
mm-hmm.
stand the case. We've been knowing that. We've been knowing that for
mm-hmm.
years.
Got to have somebody in the corner.
Yeah.
Got to have somebody in that corner. Otherwise, we just go down. We're going down. Going
no.
down.
Without no parachute. That's bad.
Right. It's free falling. Just
that's
free
right.
falling.
And,
you know, and
that,
you know, mm-hmm.
wake
mm-hmm.
up from
it's
that crack
like
induced coma. Induced coma
uh-huh.
and stuff. And find out that you're falling 500 feet per second. And you be saying,
mm-hmm.
oh, it's already too late.
Right, right. You're already down the rabbit hole. Already
mm-hmm.
down the rabbit hole. That's the thing. That's, but it's following the money trail, you know. Put us in jail
yep.
and we get money, you know, just like property. Again, we're still property.
Yep.
That hasn't changed and it probably won't change. As long as they know that we can be considered quote-unquote property, that's how we're
yeah.
they're going to treat us, just like property.
But we gotta
yes,
up
yes,
our
yes.
game. We gotta go with a game and stuff that cause us
uh-huh.
to be unified. We must unite.
Right.
Other than
right.
that, it's not gonna work unless we had a couple billion. Then yeah, no,
mm-hmm.
we can fight.
Uh-huh.
We can fight. fight through some stuff. But other than that, and they know it. It's difficult. It's difficult to try and get three brothers or sisters and stuff in the same room together to come up with one little small plan. Okay, what we're going to do in this plan is we're going to try and see how we can eliminate these ants.
Right. Ants and cockroaches and stuff, right? You're so funny. You are so funny. But that's just how it is, because it's all following the money trail, and it seems to be leading to whom? Us. We are a billion-dollar, you know, entity.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, if we can get them involved, see, we got it made, because they'll do all the labor, they'll do all everything, and we don't have to do anything at all. You know, they get us to do the dirty work, and, you know, yes, master, yes, boss, you know, like, and we so worried about having our head down, we need to, you know, bring our head up.
Yeah.
We need to bring our head up and square our shoulders and just, you know, not act, but take charge of our own life. That's what we need to do.
That's right.
That's
and
what
we have
to
do with
and
people
we,
and stuff that we can trust, people that we can trust to put in to be able to do what they say they're going to do.
That's right.
Do what you say you're going to do. What are the responsibilities?
Right, exactly.
What kind of goals are you know, Are we going to do A, B, C, and D? Well, did we vote on doing it? And is everybody on board? You know, we have a tendency sometimes just because they didn't take my vote, then I'm just going crazy. Well, I'm going to show them. I'm going to show them because they didn't take my vote. I'm going to show them what it's like, you know.
Right.
And then somebody trying to sabotage the whole thing and stuff. Okay.
That's it. Sabotage. Yeah, we sabotage our own self. Our own self. You know, we're our biggest saboteurs.
There's no trust.
Right. And earlier you had talked about opioid and addiction and mental health. That's our next topic, is the opioid crisis. Who's to blame? And so we're going to check out that and see, okay, who is to blame?
Drug companies supplied and pushed out highly addictive painkillers in the height of the opioid crisis. Taking a look at data by the DEA, 76 billion pills were distributed between 2006 and 2012. And according to the CDC, there were nearly 100,000 overdose deaths. Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin and one of the largest opioid manufacturers during that period, is now facing lawsuits from nearly every state. This morning, local addictionologist Dr. Rob Kelly gives his take on who should be held accountable. Dr. Kelly, let's first talk about the healthcare system and how these drugs get in the hands of patients. So from the top down to the patient, who do you think should be held accountable?
The bottom line is, it's not the person going for the pain meds that's accountable. Let's make that clear from the start. What it is, it's the company that are making these very, very strong painkillers that are then pushing them out. We're talking about Purdue having hundreds of sales reps to push these extortionately addictive pain meds out to their patients. Everybody blames their heroin. Let's take the heroin out. Let's go back to the health system where it all started, because the health system in America is so messed up that they can push these drugs and make it legal, and that's how it tears off. I mentioned this 10 years ago when I first come to America, that we have an opioid crisis in America, and nobody listened, and look what's happening now.
Doctors have incentives to be able to write certain prescription pills a certain amount of patients, and then they get a nice vacation, a nice trip with their family. Do you think they're also responsible?
This is from my experience and my patients' experience. The doctors and the psychiatrists are 100% responsible for writing prescriptions for those drugs. They know what them drugs do. I went to a psychiatrist when I first come over here, and we did tests to make sure who we could trust as a doctor and who would just write a script. And in one occasion, I went into a psychiatrist with a shall not name. He never looked at my medical record, and I asked for oxycodone, and he wrote the prescription and gave it to me, and we never made eye contact. And it's about time somebody started to blame these guys, because let's get real serious about this. We're talking about murder. We're talking about attempted murder. We're talking about all these things by the time it gets to the end user, and what we do is he had a heroin overdose. No, 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 guys. That's not the case. The doctor who prescribes them, they should be more focused on those. So further down the line, if the patient dies, the doctor must be held responsible.
Much of the focus right now is on Purdue Pharma. Who's to say this can't happen again?
Well, to tell you the truth, and this is my experience, and we research this thoroughly, and we do from patients who come to us. We ask them, what's the first thing you took? And we follow that down. Fentanyl, for one. I know fentanyl is doing exactly the same thing. Nobody needs fentanyl except those who are dying from extreme cancer and the extreme pain. Doctors are getting the payoffs, and the psychiatrists are getting the payoffs, and the end result is death in every single case on the streets. From my experience and knowledge, big companies, what they do is they take billions a year on their drugs, and they set millions aside for lawsuits.
What kind of restrictions, if anything at all, do you think can be put in place with these drug companies and maybe even these doctors that receive incentives for writing these prescription painkillers?
Nobody can put a sanction or anything for the companies that make it, unfortunately. But what we can do is educate the doctors further of what these painkillers are doing. Because what it, basically they are street drugs. So we can look at the doctors and say, hey, if you write more than 5 prescriptions for a strongly, highly addictive medicine, we're going to look at your practice, look at your surgery, and we want your records to find out who you've been giving it to. And as long as there's a specific reason and a proper reason for doing that, that's fine. But let's have some flags raised when somebody comes in with a pain so bearable that they've got into their car, they've drove to the practice, they've walked from the practice into the waiting room, into the doctor's office, and complained of extreme pain. Let's go back to the doctors and hold them responsible 100%.
Now, Dr. Kelly, you've been in the forefront of addiction recovery. Can you share more about the program that you have here now in San Antonio?
What we have, and because of what's being used now, the strong painkillers, and alcohol has always been a problem, I developed a program that is outside my psychology range, or in the UK, out of that range. So what we've done is we've come up with a program that concentrates on the neural pathways. So basically, if you're an addict or alcoholic, anybody can stop. The key is, how do we stop? There's people taking drugs, there's liquor stores on every corner. How do we stop? Well, we stop it by using neuro-linguistic programming, which basically changes the neural pathways. So it's like a V, let's say, the neural pathways. One of them is very strong. That's the drinking and using. What we do through somatic experience is we start to build new neural pathways. So unless the compulsion to drink or use is taken away from the real alcoholic, he will relapse and continue to drink.
To Dr. Rob Kelly for that interview. Rob Kelly Recovery Group offers addiction treatment pro bono for patients who cannot afford.
That's nice. How many, it's all the doctors following the money trail. That's what we're talking about today, following the money trail. We talked about NRA. We talked about mass shootings. We talked about gun control. We talked about COVID. We talked about everything, prisons. And now the opioid addiction and mental health. I mean, and I remember the other day when Joshua was on the phone and how he was saying that all basically the doctors do is keep their mental health patients drugged so that they don't have any, they don't know what's going on. They're just in a drug-induced life. And it's like, okay, just as long as I can keep this person. But who's paying these things? Is it the people paying these things? Or is it the medical, not the medical, excuse me, is it the patient paying these things? Are they just using the people as test subjects? It's sad. What do you think, Dr. Parks, or Sergeant Parks?
Well, it all depends on, what type of an addiction people is. If you talk about the oxycodone deal, mm-hmm. those people are normally almost middle class or have decent jobs where medical will take care of that. You know.
Okay.
But
the
type
about
of
fentanyl.
Yeah, the type of drugs and stuff that they have,
mm-hmm.
we can't
mm-hmm.
get it twisted because this is manufactured like out of China, okay, shipped into Mexico, and it is powerful. Okay. It is powerful. Now, the pharmaceuticals, they have a certain strength
mm-hmm.
that they're going to. So once say you got a back injury, like the guy that went in the hospital and shot the doctor, okay?
Uh-huh.
So I'm looking at that as like, well, the doctor prescribed that he get these painkillers, and now the doctor's saying you can't have no more painkillers, and the brother went ballistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right,
so, oh,
right.
That's it. I can't live with this pain, so I'm taking you down with me. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And any doctor that prescribes any kind of drug, especially a Schedule mm-hmm. 1 drug, then that doctor get paid behind that. It ain't no free
yes,
prescription. If he prescribed it, then he gets a part of the action. You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah.
And you're talking about Purdue Pharma, you know, that's where the money is. It's like these crazy, oh, Lord, sometimes they just need to ban guns, ban these drugs, because you have zombies out there.
Absolutely.
You have, then they go out because of mental health issues, get a gun, as we were talking about earlier, following the money trail, and then shoot somebody because they can't get their choice of drug. And so it's like, and that's why I was talking about all these things tonight, because it's basically a circle. It is a circle of following the money trail. Drugs, opioids, prisons, NRA, COVID, all that, gun control. It's like, so how would you find out a red flag on this person? That shot up the doctor because he couldn't get anything. You wouldn't, because it's too late, is it not?
Yep, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's deeper than that, and it's
mm-hmm.
just all about
mm-hmm.
greed. It's all about greed, All about greed. If you're in a company and there's a competing company and stuff, just like with the pandemic, and then the different
mm-hmm.
companies, pharmaceuticals is making it. Don't you know that all of them made out like fat cats? Because the government had
mm-hmm.
to get all of them money, and let them race to try and come up with a cure.
Right.
Now, right mm-hmm. now, I don't think that we understand how much money they then gave them. All of those companies, the government paid billions of dollars.
Billions. And I got a question. Do they just make this money? How do they get this money? Is it just, here's a check, la, 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 or how does someone get billions of dollars in research?
Well, you start with, number one, being a company and stuff that does procurement.
Uh-huh.
With the government,
uh-huh.
that's what it's called. It's a procurement deal and stuff that, and then
okay.
they come and say, we could probably have this on the market and stuff in 10 or 15 months, and you give the government
mm-hmm.
a price, and the government is supposed
mm-hmm.
to shop around, and they're supposed to get that person and stuff that has that price. It's supposed to be throw out the lowest one. And the highest one, and then take the one in the middle. But it's so
uh-huh,
twisted
uh-huh.
now. It's all by influence. Who knows Dr. Fauci? We got Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci. Who knows Dr. Fauci? Okay, so I'm from Moderna. You know, Dr. Fauci is saying, okay, give it to Moderna. Okay, all right, and they got $15 billion right there. You know?
To work on a cure.
That's the way it is. Somebody's name. It's a popularity deal and stuff. Who's in whose pocket?
Right.
Absolutely crazy. Wow. And we can't get no good near that supply chain and stuff.
At all.
We can come in here. We can make brand new widgets and stuff that's gonna set all of us free. And we ain't even gotta walk to the store no more. Guess what? We got a drone. They're gonna go by the store, pick our stuff up, and deliver it to us and stuff. Guess what? And we'll starve. The end of the day, we're gonna starve and stuff because we can't get in the market unless we create.
We can't get our drone.
Unless we create our own market. Okay. Own market. Just like the mafia did. Oh, okay, no problem. We're gonna bootleg. They won't let us have no alcohol here. We'll go to Canada and get it. That's what the Kennedys did. You know. We'll go to Canada and stuff. You know. They used to be talking about marijuana. You go crazy about marijuana and stuff, you know. Okay, well, you gonna do marijuana, everybody crazy off marijuana, we're gonna send them straight to prison.
Right.
And now that they legalize the marijuana, it's still a federal crime. Do you know it's still on the feds book? You know, unless you got a prescription from a doctor.
Right. Okay. Right.
I'm saying, what the hell is that? All these states legalizing and make millions of dollars.
Right. And still.
And then the government is getting the government is getting the tax from it. And then the federal government is saying, oh, it's still not legal according to the feds. Now, how can that be?
Some places it is and some places it is not. I mean, you can be able to get a lot of surgeries and stuff done in Canada cheaper, you know. So you go to Canada, get your cannabis, or your THC, or whatever it is, and shoot. And now it's like, oh, okay, we're legalized in some states, but not all. So,
well, it's definitely a way to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Washington State done figured that out since they had it legalized and stuff. You know, just the tax on, you know. And I think Oregon, I don't know whether Oregon has got it, Idaho, Colorado, all of them states who want to go to marijuana, legalizing marijuana.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's going to help somebody, it's a natural drug, a natural whatever. I don't like the smell of it. It gives me a headache. But, I mean, if it helps somebody, you know, let it help somebody. Joe, can you hear us? Because I know you out there and you hung up and came back.
Sure
can. Can you hear us?
Yep, I sure can.
Okay.
Yep.
How are you?
Okay, how about you? Hey, Sergeant Park.
How you doing, Joe?
Yeah.
We're just talking about the nature.
Yeah.
Well, COVID. You're talking about COVID. Absolutely. It's all about COVID. It's all about the money, and the end game is all about just using COVID as a bioweapon, in my opinion, to destroy the entire planet.
And like I said, this topic tonight is following the money trail. So if you can follow the money trail to where the bios are, hey, it's almost like, you know, getting the money at the end of the rainbow. Almost like getting the money at the end of the rainbow. Because, I mean, billions, how many billions did I say? $480 billion. And that's just what we know about. That's just what we know about. So, and then we talked about prison, and now we're on opioid addiction, And our next is human trafficking. And that's a $150 billion industry worldwide.
Got this crazy article. It says human trafficking is a $150 billion industry. And they're recruiting kids from ages 11 through 14. That's just disgusting. It says, Milwaukee, in the midst of the deadly coronavirus pandemic, a silent epidemic rages. Human trafficking is a $150 billion global industry, and Southeast Wisconsin is a major hub. So it's happening worldwide, and the pandemic is happening just in every country, basically. It's happening in the United States as well. And I'm not going to read the whole thing. I will try to leave a link in the description, but just, you know, you can look it up on a search engine. Milwaukee Mitchell International Airport features signage that asks the public to spot the signs and break the chains, reminding that human trafficking can happen anywhere. And that's right, it does. It's not that it can happen anywhere. It actually does happen pretty much
anywhere, everywhere.
So with children now spending more time on computers and devices, taking part in virtual learning during the coronavirus pandemic, concerns are growing. When we are looking at the sex trafficking of minors, 76% of transactions for online sex with minor females start online. So those are factors we need to be looking at, especially with the virtual world we are all now living in because of the pandemic, Catherine Marsh said. And, yeah, you know, once again, ages are from 11 to 14, okay? And it's not just girls, if boys are included. So, yeah, I think that, you know, we should aware to, we need to make this aware. We got to bring awareness to this. You know, I recommend that you share the link or make your own video and you know, post it, right? And if you can, hit.
There you go. $150 billion. And as I was telling you, it's a circle doing COVID. That's what they were online, you know, getting swallowed up by sex traffickers, you know, because we didn't take the time to spend the time with our children because we were so busy doing other things. So, you know, which is sad. So what do you all think about that one?
Well, you know, if you look at the type of people that are being trafficked, then those are people basically that nobody is going to miss. Just like when Ted Bundy was killing all them prostitutes and stuff, what did he say? Who gonna miss? Ain't nobody gonna miss no prostitute.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So you go and set a situation and stuff, and this is worldwide.
Correct.
This is happening worldwide, you know.
And every time I go into the bathroom or the, or even the an airport, you know, they talk about, you know, sex trafficking, human trafficking. So, you know, it's imminent. And I think there's a word or something that a person can say if they are being trafficked. I don't know what it is. I need to find out. But there's a word that they say if they're being trafficked. So $150 billion. I mean, these children are being sold 11 to 14. 11 to 14. And that doesn't even include the older population. But as young as 11 to 14. You know, so you got to keep your children close, and, you know, and it's just, it makes my head hurt just thinking about what people do to young kids, you know. And another thing is,
everybody should be alarmed behind that, okay? Everybody should be alarmed behind that. But just think, in order for somebody to be doing that, okay, somebody has to know who's doing it, okay? Somebody, for every crime that's committed, somebody know who's committing the crime.
Okay.
Without a doubt. you know. Mm-hmm. And then to get away with mm-hmm. that kind of money, unreported, you know, it's probably that money is probably being laundry.
Extorted. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's laundering the money? It could be here in Yakima, one of these banks in Yakima that we're laundering the money. You know, somebody has to know. You know.
Right. Right. Joe, you have anything? Joe? Are you guys talking about?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, we even organs are being harvested, you know, being trafficked. So it's just humans; it's organs and everything else. So we just
they've been doing that a long time. Mm-hmm. Organs.
Mm-hmm.
That's been happening for many years.
And who's the organs been trafficked the most?
Well, I would say anybody's, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
because
a lot of them. Yeah, but how can you tell if somebody you got an organ from was black or whatever, unless the doctor told you?
Mm-hmm.
Unless the doctor told you, I'm putting Sergeant Parr's organ in you. Who in the hell is Sergeant Parr?
Right.
He's an old
ass
African American. Yeah.
Oh, God.
He's an 80-year-old African American. Oh, no, I don't think that's going to work.
They probably won't take yours.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, just follow the money. I mean, who's getting this money? Is it just everybody all over? I mean, you have your human trafficking. You have your organs. You have just hurts me. It just hurts my heart to know that it's out there like that. But, I mean, it's normal. That's what this
is. Yeah, it is. It's probably some of the same old billionaires and stuff that's making all the money, making most of the money. They probably in their little areas. You know, a lot of them don't have no conscience. They don't have no conscience.
Right,
oh, we're making the money and stuff, you know, make us, we're trying to be the richest billionaire in the world.
Just over somebody trafficking.
Yeah.
Taking somebody's child and just, But that's basically our show, you know, following the money trail. We covered a pretty different array of topics and everything. So I just really appreciate everybody joining in today and talking about money. In order to keep Let's Do a Radio on the air, you can Cash App to donate to $ISEVALCOUR. And the announcements for the week is tomorrow night we have Bible study with Reverend Carolyn and Rodney McCullough. That's 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. And on Thursday we have View of the Kingdom with Raw Power Ministry out of Pine Bluff, Arkansas. And that's also 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. And Sunday we have June 12th. We have Pastor B, A Time to Decree, and she's out of Little Rock, Arkansas, and she comes on at 3 p.m. as well, 6 p.m. Eastern. And then you have me again that next week on the 14th to Miss Inez Says, Let's Talk About It, and that's 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. So also, we want y'all to support Reverend Ronnie Marshall with his Don't Turn Away From God album. And now he has a video out, and I saw it's pretty good. It's pretty good. And you can support him through iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby, and all music media. And if you have a topic you want to discuss, let's talk about it. Email me at letsdoitradio@gmail.com. And don't forget to share on all your social media platforms, all of them. So so we can get out there and be heard and people can listen. And you can also listen to any previous episodes on demand by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/letsdoitradio and choose any episode that you'd like to choose. So thank you, thank you, thank you again. You have been, thank you for joining us this evening. And if you've got something on your chest, don't keep it to yourself. Join us again on next Tuesday and let's talk about it with Miss Inez. And we could be discussing your topic. I've been your hostess with our crew today, Sergeant Parks, Aaron Woody, and my ride and die, Rhonda Gardner, and of course, I call him Montana Joe with us this evening. So we thank each and every one of y'all for joining us today. And I've been your hostess for the evening, Miss Inez, CEO and fashion designer of Anaïs Alcou Designs at www.anaisecalcour.com. And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram under the same name, Anaïs Alcou. And so think about the kind of world you want to live in if you were to change. And if you're going to be anything, be kind. So we want to thank each and every one of you for joining us today. That is our show. Join us tomorrow for Bible study and all of our other segments throughout the week. Please be safe. Don't get human trafficked. Stay away from your opioids. Take your guns out of your house, the ARs and AKs, and, you know, be nice to each other. And so thank you again for joining us. Peace out. Have a good day.